I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're tuned in to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is Eric Kleinsmith. Eric served in the US military intelligence and is an expert on terrorism. He now works for the American Military University. Today, we discuss Afghanistan and his analysis of how, by pulling out military forces, we have opened up the next phase of terror.
You have to find who that next generation is, and they've been sitting out in the wings for decades, growing their skills and wanting this type of opportunity. We have to follow the money to identify who are the folks that are taking advantage of this, and then who are the new leaders that are going to create these new organizations.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sonia Morton Firth Show. And today I have back a lovely guest that I interviewed a few months ago, and I'll let him introduce himself once more again. But enough to say, I'm very honored to have him on the show today, and I think we're in for a special treat. Eric, let me pass over to you. Can you tell my audience who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Eric Kleinsmith. I'm an associate vice president with American Military University. We are a 100% online university. We have been either online or distance learning since our creation in 1991. We were primarily designed for education of military personnel remotely, but have changed over the years. And now we have about 190 different programs. Prior to coming to the school, I was a U.S. Army military intelligence officer for several years. I took part in an operation called Able Danger, where we were hunting Al-Qaeda prior to 9/11, and we had identified the 9/11 hijackers, but were forced to delete the data because of the, I want to say, the archaic rules on information and data mining and information harvesting that included U.S. persons. So I am the one who deleted the data that later, and I later had to go testify that I was the one that had the information of the 9/11 hijackers, the New Jersey cell, and yet was required to delete it by military regulations. I went on from there to become a program manager with a very small company called Lockheed Martin, where I ran intelligence training for over a decade for Army intelligence operatives, intelligence soldiers for many years.
And look, guys, if you haven't seen the show where I talk to Eric and we go into depth about 9/11 and the investigation behind that, please do check that out. I'll put the link again in the show notes. So if you haven't seen that episode, please go give it a watch. I think you'll find it very interesting. I think let's just on that note, before we come to talk about Afghanistan, which is why Eric's on the program today, we should definitely mention that we're coming up to the anniversary. Can't believe it's been so long since 9/11. Is there anything, Eric, that you want to say on that note?
It's been a very tough. I mean, everybody's going to have a different feeling. If you were old enough to remember the day as it happened, but my biggest regret is that we had these guys before. We had the ability. There was really not many folks that were watching terrorists within the U.S. prior to 9/11, but we were. And so when we knew this had happened, our team, a very small team, we've carried that burden the rest, you know, for the past 20 years, that we knew this was coming. We knew that, you know, not knowing the shape or form or the location, but we knew something was coming. And having the ability to look in the future like that has been tough to carry for 20 years. And to see all of the consequences for that, including just the last few months that we're now in the what would be considered the fall of Afghanistan, that after 20 years of being in country, we're now in a new stage where we're going to have to revert back to watching for the terrorists to come to us instead of going to them.
Well, let's go to that, Eric, because you've recently written an article, which I don't believe is published quite yet. Or it might be by the time this is aired in the next couple of days.
Yeah, it should be out today or tomorrow. So it's Thursday or Friday of the 9th or 10th of September at amuedge.com.
And I will put the links to that as soon as I get it, if we can, in the show notes. So please check those out. Eric, so come on, what are your views on or maybe your views, but looking at the situation now, as the US military have pulled out of Afghanistan, what do you see happening?
Well, there's two big things that are most concerning. And the first one is just the massive amount of equipment that we left behind is going to completely jumpstart the entire international Islamic fundamentalist or Islamic jihad movement within these terror groups. Now, I know that it's right now this equipment is in the hands of the Taliban, but this will quickly... The equipment equals cash equals capability. And so this will quickly spread from the Taliban into a huge, massive international black market will open up, and terror groups will get a hold of this. Whatever the Taliban can use, they will use in the short term. Whatever they cannot use, or if they can't get folks to come in and fix the equipment that doesn't work, they're going to sell it. And the cash value alone is just an incredible amount of money to be filtering in throughout all these different terror groups.
And this is U.S. Military equipment, yes. that the military had to leave behind. Right. What sort of equipment or how much are we talking here? I guess most of my audience will just be general population, may not be military, so won't have an understanding of this.
This we're talking in the realm of $70 to $90 billion worth of equipment, ammunition, weaponry, reconnaissance aircraft, helicopters. And if you think about it in terms of, I got this from a historian, an author I really like, a guy named Victor Davis Hanson. He remarked in an article that over 70 years of U.S. providing military assistance to Israel, we probably gave them about $100 billion over 70 years. And we gave the Taliban almost the equivalent in a month by leaving this equipment behind. Now, that equipment is not just going to stay in a warehouse or stay in stockpiles in Taliban strongholds or in military bases. That it is undoubtedly going to go all throughout the world in terms of cash and buying relationships and buying capabilities or buying surrogates to work for an Islamic jihadi organization.
So I guess from the immediate question that springs to mind is, firstly, I guess, was the Taliban overhaul inevitable? I've spoken to a lot of veterans here who have said it was inevitable that they were going to take over. Now, I don't know what your views are on that, but whatever the views are, looking at how much has been left behind, surely they would have gradually got that out of the country before they made the announcement that the US was going to pull out.
Right. Now that's a big, there's two thoughts to this. One is like you just mentioned, it was inevitable that they would have moved back in. But if we had prep time, we could have gotten this equipment out. The other thought is more of how most terror groups have a very difficult time making what's called a generational jump. And if you remember the leftist Marxist groups like Red Brigade or Action Direct or the Bader-Meinhof gang from the 70s in Europe, none of these organizations were able to make that generational jump. Even within the UK, the various parts of the IRA or splinter groups of the IRA were never able to motivate the next generation of fighters to join their cause. The only way you can do that is to never give this your terrorist forces any kind of victory, but then also, and this is very draconian, but you have to track down and destroy every single breathing part of the organization. You can't just destroy the head and a new head will grow in its place. And so that's one of the things that, were we really committed into tracking them down into the far reaches of every corner of the world to do that? And in some cases, we failed that, quite honestly.
Why do you think? Biden pulled out so quickly?
I think it was just part of a plan that was in motion, and there was no one to say we need to stop this and we need to rethink this along the way. Now, I think that is as simple an answer as I can give. Last thing I want to do is get into a political argument about anything else. But there is a tendency for many military operations, and sometimes it's just in the military officer corps. Sometimes they call it the bus to Abilene. Is everybody's on this bus, nobody wants to go to Abilene, but because it's already in motion, nobody really wants to upset or stop the bus, you know, and be the one person that does that. So once a plan is in action, it continues on no matter what.
And look, we can't take that time. The decision has been made, the action has been taken.
Right.
The US has withdrawn as the UK have. Right. But what do you think the measures that now should be put in place to move forward, given what you've just said?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is, you know, just starting with the new capability that is now available to both the Taliban and then all of the surrogates and their surrogates, as well as independent jihadi groups around the world. When we were doing Able Danger, we were tracking Islamic terrorists in four major locations. We were tracking them in Europe, primarily the Balkans. And as I spent a tour in the Balkans doing peacekeeping operations in the 90s, we knew where Hamas offices were, where they were located, right outside some of the Muslim towns. So that was one area. Then there is your Maghreb, the Maghreb area of North Africa. There were many groups that we were tracking there. There was the Middle East, and then there was the Far East. As this weapons and cash filters out through these different organizations, they're going to receive an entire new lifeline or new capabilities to regrow their organizations or branch out or create new organizations from scratch that are connected to them. And so starting just with this money aspect, and then the other piece is having this moral victory and the perception of having a victory. This is the Americans are now the fourth empire that has died within Afghanistan. So you have Alexander the Great and the Macedonians, then you have the British in the 19th century, then you have the Russians in the 20th century, now you have the Americans in the 21st century. And so that kind of victory is incredibly important for terrorist groups to stay active and to have the perception that they are winning. A terrorist group that is being defeated or is being pounded by aircraft and ground forces on a daily basis is not going to gain new recruits. Because of the life expectancy is relatively low. But a terrorist group that is being seen as successful is going to get all kinds of different benefits from a moral victory. So you're going to get a new generation of motivated fighters, new leaders, entirely different social demographic, new goals and objectives are now going to be set. And, you know, some of their initial goals, and they call it to rid the Islamic world or Dar al-Islam from the apostates, from the foreign invaders. Now that they feel that may have been accomplished to a certain degree, it is now time to take the fight to the West and take the fight to us.
So what is that? I mean, so basically what you're saying is we've given them a new lease of life, essentially.
Yes.
by pulling out, we've given
absolutely
them an extra breath,
absolutely,
which is absolutely terrifying, given that we're literally right on the anniversary of something that shattered, and not just a nation but the world.
Right.
What do you see happening in terms of potential terrorist attacks? Mm-hmm. In the future?
Well, it's, you know, we do have some time. There is a simple bombing like the World Trade Center in 1993, that took about 5 months. 9/11 took 2 years of planning. So it's, you're working on different timelines, from very simple attacks that may occur in the Middle East or in Western interests in the Middle East or in the Arab world, like the Kenya and Tanzania bombings. Those took a few months' time. The bombing of the USS Cole, I think, was an 8-month planning period. with an additional 2 months because their first boat sank when they tried to attack a different ship. I think it was the USS the Sullivans. Those are the types of markers that we now have to set, but we're going to have to pull out our old counterterrorism manuals, our old counterterrorism learning and threat profiling techniques to understand these organizations and how the events of the past month is changing. They're all going to change to from a very defensive and self-preservation status to more of an offensive or recruitment and a let's move forward status. Extremist groups do not rest on their laurels. They don't say, hey, we got this great victory, let's hang out for 20 years and not do much. That's not how they
should. I guess it's that old adage of strike while the iron's hot, while you've got your momentum in, that's where right. you strike again.
It's much more than just a new opportunity. It's almost an imperative for them to move forward. They can't rest and sit back. They have to move their cause forward. That's part of one of their core beliefs.
Do you see, is there a particular target that you think they may go for?
It's wide open because your targets could be anything from very symbolic, like a tourist site or something like that. And those are usually very soft targets. I think the Charlie Hebdo and the nightclub bombings and terrorists, those are fairly soft targets. Not a lot of protection around those, so that it was easier to plan for than say trying to attack a military base or something like that. Those or attack a warship, which is considered a harder target to go after. So it really depends on the individual groups, what their motivations are, what the goals they are setting, and then what's within the realm of the possible with what they have, you know, how they've been able to take advantage of this new lease on life and what's in the realm of possible. That's why the profiling these groups becomes incredibly important. Each individual group is going to have its own method of operation, its own leadership, and its own goals and objectives of what it wants to do. Their targets are going to fit within that. And that's why I'm saying we need to pull out those books on threat profiling again to learn how we do that.
And you mentioned pulling out the old books and going back to the old school. What does that mean?
Since we've been in Afghanistan for such a long time, and even in Iraq, we did spend a lot of time at least in the initial stages of going after to destroy and dismantle a lot of these organizations. Even within the Horn of Africa, there were operations taking place. After a while, when the mission turned into more of a nation building and a stability operation, we kind of put those older operations and those older analytical techniques aside. Those are the ones that we do need to bring back and understand. Again, after 20 years, most of the folks who are analysts were never born after 9/11. So some of them may have never even gotten training on pure counterterrorism operations as opposed to stability and peacekeeping operations.
Wow. Where do you think Russia and China sit in all of this?
Russia is in a unique situation because they have their own problems with ethnic minorities, both in their country and within the surrounding it. So they still have their Chechen issues. They still have their, considered to be holding the tiger by the tail. They've learned their lesson and they see it reinforced from their venture into Afghanistan. Them, like the Chinese, are gonna look at this more of an economic and a diplomatic windfall for them than anything else. And that's, wherever the Americans and where the West pulls out, there's going to be a vacuum. It's inevitable that groups like the Chinese or the Russians for financial purposes or economic purposes are going to want to move in. And remember, Afghanistan is just loaded with lithium and other rare earth minerals that are available for, anybody who's the friend of the Taliban. So besides the weapons and equipment, they still sit on a vast amount of rare earth metal resources that we were, either not prepared or did not think it was within our national interest to secure or to contract for that.
Looking at the picture, which doesn't sound rosy at all, what do you think you know, putting aside, as we said before, you know, whether it was a right thing or wrong thing, I think right. you'll know the answer to that. But you can't undo the past. All right. we can do is look at the present and the future. And we're talking factually about something that you just said, the amount of ammunition and wealth that has been left behind right. By the US military.
Right.
What action steps do you think we should take? I mean, is this a matter of us getting the military back in, us uniting in terms of nations and doing something about it? I'm just saying, and taking responsibility and saying, you know what? We made a mistake. We need to right the mistake and do something about right. it before it gets out of hand.
Well, I think the first thing is, and this is really, before we do anything, we have to get an understanding of how this fallout is going to change that entire part of the world. And my biggest recommendation for a lot of analysts that are looking at this is they now need to follow the money and follow where these weapons go, follow where these new organizations are getting propped up. Besides just the way the geopolitical balance has been upset, you know, overall, it would be too rash to say we need to rush right back in there, or we need to take, you know, go back on the offense and start tracking these folks down. We really don't know who the new leaders are, except for a few handpicked ones that are in the Afghan government. We know them, but we don't know how these organizations, the old leaders of Al Qaeda, they're old. Zawahiri and the remainders are folks who survived in Al Qaeda. They're really not going to be the movers and the shakers and the planners. You have to find who that next generation is, and they've been sitting out in the wings for decades, growing their skills and wanting this type of opportunity. We have to follow the money to identify who are the folks that are taking advantage of this, and then who are the new leaders that are going to create these new organizations.
Do you think there's any relationship building, or I mean, we're talking about the Taliban here, but is there something, do we need to be sending people in at that level?
In terms of back into Afghanistan?
Yeah.
I would say that's a tough thing to do. I mean, there's, you know, they were discussing the option of, well, you know what, why don't we retake Bagram Air Base? And at the point that we were, with the Taliban owning the entire country, it would take an entire division, an airborne division, to drop on there just to secure that base, and we take a high amount of casualties. I don't think we either have the stomach or the national will to do that right now since the pullout. But again, it's so the next step then is, so where are the tentacles going to grow from this fall, and where are the places that we can interdict? We've got a lot of rebuilding to do, both from a prestige standpoint, from an alliance standpoint, and even from a international respect standpoint. And so it's really going to be more of a defensive measure, but as a way to pause and regroup and refit, and then learn the footprint of these new organizations, these terror organizations, as they pop up, and stamp them down before they can ever get a foothold anywhere.
And that's what I was just about to say, Eric. I mean, how long have we got? I mean, you just mentioned, you know, we need to get respect back, and that's not, I guess, that, and I'll come on and ask you about what's it like at the moment in the US. I certainly know what it's like here in the UK, talking to the military. I don't really like watching the mainstream media, but obviously right. you do, and what the general sentiment is here. And of course, our governments have always been in alliance. I'm not quite sure where we are with this one. Right. What does it really do with, I know, with the military. What's it like there? What are the views in the US generally?
There is a lot of frustration. I know from our Veterans Affairs organization, which really helps veterans with mental illness and PTSD. I know their phones have been ringing off the hook. That's been a published fact right now, that a lot of veterans are having a hard time struggling with this. And again, even as a member who is, who had left the military before 9/11, just the influence that I could have had to prevent a lot of this is weighed heavy. And I know that's, you know, within anybody who's worked this. So it's been, there's been a lot of soul searching within individuals, both soldiers, officers, veterans, active duty, you know, and even folks who work in the security realm. It's, there's going to be a lot of individual and then organizational soul searching to figure out, all right, this is a new phase. We need to readjust. We need to prepare for the next one. Quit feeling sorry for ourselves. Pull up your bootstraps and let's move out. And that's really the attitude that needs to take place, whether it's from an analytical standpoint or from an organizational security standpoint. With the amount of refugees that are being spread throughout the world and accepted without properly vetting them, we may have already let in the reconnaissance teams and planning teams into our own country. So not only do we have an issue of Americans and Westerners left behind, but we may have introduced Taliban or terrorist operatives onto our own soil and let them identify, pick out, and plan targets already. And that's what I mean by how dangerous of a time we're in now.
And I, you know, it's such a difficult one, I guess, Eric, because as we've seen on the news, we know what's happening. We know how the Taliban treats certainly their women, their children.
Right.
And there are innocent people, lots of innocent people that would right. be victims to this. And we're caught on that edge of, do we take them in, rescue them, or like you say, are we opening up doors to potentially the enemy without knowing?
Right.
Are there measures that we can put in place to stop that happening?
Well, I think at least the good part, or I hate to say it that way, but a benefit from the disaster of 9/11 was we've built throughout our society a much more protective security apparatus. And so even from at the federal government, within the military, but also in our commercial sector, a lot of people don't know this, but places like Disney have intelligence analytical teams to protect their theme parks, to understand the threats that may come to them, or to, you know, the entertainment industry has now picked up on that. So for 20 years, they've been preparing for this. It's just time to light that lamp that says, you've been preparing for this so long, now it has come. And whether you're working in, you know, infrastructure, whether you're working in nuclear power or anything like that, These are all targets that are open for business in terms of terrorists. But we've at least built and spent an inordinate amount of money to build up our security posture all throughout our society. That's at least one benefit that we've at least kept our guard up that long.
Eric, are you in talks with? I mean, is your article going to be published? Are they listening to you there?
Within the school? Oh, this
yeah,
is
wow, yeah. Wider than the school.
Yeah, it's a school. I mean, I do get calls. I do help analysts frequently. Several of them, just because I do give webinars, I give presentations on threat profiling. Most of it is based upon the book I published last year on intelligence operations. So I do get lots of calls for help. And most of it, I just do it on the side.
Eric, tell me, did you see this coming? Did you know, not in a secretive way, but could you foresee this potentially happening?
If there was always a fear of us leaving Afghanistan, and whether we were going to leave it, you know, better. I want to say it better than when we got there. We in this case we did not, and there were some aspects that were better, but it's been a struggle now. The best thing to know about this type of terrorism is it is a long game. And I think there was, and I can't remember who it was, it was a politician that said it's from the US. It was such a long time ago. And it was, you know, how long do we expect to be fighting this war? And I think he remarks it was something like 80 years, at least. So we could be in here for generation after generation. And honestly, and as sad as it is to admit that, that's the fight that we're still in the midst of. So the end of our operations in Afghanistan is not the end of the campaign. It's not the end of the war. It's not the end of the game. It's halftime.
Halftime with a few injuries, our side, your side.
Right.
And God bless every single life that has been lost on behalf. Right.
Absolutely.
Of what's gone on. Eric, do you have any final? I found this extraordinarily interesting. I'm looking forward to reading your article, certainly. Is there any last words you would like to say?
Yeah, just again, check out the article at amuedge.com. And it's, you know, as things progress and things change, I hope that I am wrong, but I have with the amount of time that I have spent teaching counterterrorism analysis and putting information together and studying groups, you know, over decades, I don't see it going any other way than the fight coming to us.
Well, on that note, I'll end with my question that I always end with, which is, if you were to write a message in a bottle for future generations to find, Eric, what would that message be?
It would be to remember this is a long fight, and it's on us how much we will continue to defend ourselves.
Eric, thank you so much for being a guest on this special show.
Thank you.
Thank you for all the work that you're doing on behalf of our nations.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday. So hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.